Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Women's Soccer Zone. Great to have you back as always, and apologies for the slight delay in getting this edition of the show out, but I hope it's worth the wait. We certainly have a couple of good interviews for you, and the first will be with Scotland international Rachel Causey, who was of course announced as the latest acquisition at the Seattle Reign in the NWSL. So I had a chat with her about her move across to America. I also caught up with our friend JJ Duke from Our Game magazine, who of course was on the last show previewing the NWSL draft. So I had to catch up with him to talk about some of the moves and picks that were made in Philadelphia a few weeks ago. And finally, speaking of the draft, I was able to speak to the overall number one pick, Morgan Bryan, who was of course selected by the Houston Dash, and I had a chat with her about being the number one pick and of course how she is getting on in that very talented US women's national team. So without further ado, let's get going.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So there's only one place that we can really start on this episode of Women's Soccer Zone, and that is the news this week that Kelly Smith, the England international, has announced her international retirement after 117 caps and 46 goals to her name, a record for her country. She's decided to hang up her boots and concentrate on her career with Arsenal Ladies and of course her coaching, which we saw a glimpse of last season when she managed a couple of games for Arsenal Ladies after Shelley Kerr's resignation. Kelly, a pioneer for a number of current players in the FAWSL and for the England team, as well as young girls currently taking up the sport, will be sorely missed by the international team, I'm sure, and there's been plenty of messages of support coming in from the world of women's football, the likes of France international Camille Abelie, Mia Hamm, Abby Wambeck and many, many others, including current England captain Steph Horton, all sending their best to Kelly. And I'm sure that along with myself, many of the listeners of this show will extend that goodwill to Kelly, certainly someone who has entertained on and off the field during a long international career that spans 20 years, and I will certainly be looking to get her on the show on a future edition, probably in the next month or so. But I also wanted to have a chat about some of the FAWSL moves that have taken place. I mentioned in the last episode that there had been a number of moves that had taken place during this off-season with the FAWSL due to kick off in April. And certainly clubs have been very, very busy as they look to strengthen in the lead up to the 2015 season. I think rather than going through all of the moves, I'll pick out a few that have certainly caught my eye. And I think the one that probably stands out for me is the Nigerian under 20 international, Asisat Oshoala, who was so impressive during the Women's World Cup under 20 tournament in Canada last year, winning the Golden Boot, and no doubt Liverpool Ladies fans will be excited to see what she can bring to the team for 2015. Looking at some of the other transfers that have taken place, former Western New York Flash midfielder Vicky Lasada has joined Arsenal Ladies to strengthen what is already looking like a decent side, who will no doubt be pushing for the FAWSL title this year. And obviously Man City continue to build on the signings that they have already made. Looking at who has come in the last month or so, Jennifer Beattie has joined from Montpellier, the Scottish international defender come striker, England international Demi Stokes, Welsh international Sarah Wiltshire, and England under 23 international Nikita Paris has also joined on loan. So Man City looking very strong, and no doubt they will continue to strengthen in the lead up to the beginning of the campaign in April. One of the busiest clubs during the off season has actually been Notts County Ladies, who have made a number of acquisitions. We spoke at length last season about how they struggled to score goals, and they have certainly addressed that issue with the signing of Rachel Williams for Chelsea Ladies. They've also brought in Rachel's teammate from Chelsea Ladies, Laura Bassett, who will no doubt add some much needed experience and know-how at the back for the Midlands club. And lining up alongside her in the defence will be former Everton Ladies left-back Alex Greenwood, who has recently been named in Mark Sampson's England squad to face the US Women's National Team next week. And joining Laura, Rachel and Alex will be former Doncaster Rovers Bells midfielder Jess Sigsworth, who has represented England at under 19 and under 23 level and is an extremely exciting young attacking midfielder. And joining them will be Fern Whelan from Everton Ladies and Danielle Bewitt from Chelsea Ladies. And most recently, Leanne Crichton has also joined the club, the Scottish international, to add to what is looking like a very, very strong squad. And finally, we've spoken at length about how Bristol Academy have lost a number of players over the last month or two, but they have made a few signings in the last few weeks with the acquisitions, most notably Welsh internationals Hayley Ladd and Nadia Lawrence, as well as Sharla Passariello, who has joined from South Florida. One player who I didn't mention who has left the FAWSL is Rachel Causey, who was last season named Notts County Ladies Player of the Year, and she has now joined the Seattle Reign out in America. And I managed to catch up with her and have a chat about her move to the NWSL. So here she is. Okay, so now on this part of the show, we are welcomed by our first guest, Rachel Causey, who has recently joined the Seattle Reign in the NWSL from Notts County Ladies. Rach, thanks for joining me. I guess the first question I would ask is, how much are you looking forward to mixing it with some of the best players in the world out in America?
Obviously it's been a big move for me, and it's a move that I'm really looking forward to. Like you say, it's with the pros and some of the best pros in the world, so you know, from that aspect it's hugely exciting. And I just think as a whole, you know, I think America and the American League and the way they run it and the way they promote it is just slightly different from any other experience that you get, certainly in Europe. And from speaking to others, you know, players I know that are there just now and players that have played there previously, I think, you know, many say it's a special experience and something that you learn, you can't help but learn so much from.
And you'll get the opportunity to play with your international teammate Kim Little. How did you manage to have a chat with her before committing to the Reign?
We've spoken a little bit. Obviously, I know Kim really well. We've grown up sort of together, and Mum and Dad's live, you know, only 30 miles apart, I think. So I've known Kim for a lot of years, and I've trained and played against her a lot of times, and she's someone whose opinion I value highly. And yet, you know, we did get a chance to speak before the move, or sort of certainly around the time it was happening. And obviously, I've spoken to Kim throughout last year whilst she was at Seattle herself. And obviously, she has a lot of positive things to say, particularly about Seattle itself and also about Laura Harvey. So, you know, it's something that I feel is a huge opportunity for me. And again, it's something that I can't wait to do.
So for Seattle Reign fans who maybe haven't seen as much of you as they would like, because they don't get the coverage over there of our game over here that we get of theirs, what sort of player are they getting into their team?
It's quite a difficult question. I'm not sure I've ever been asked that before. I think a big part of my game is certainly I like to play football. Previously, you know, I've played in sort of midfield roles and more attacking roles, and so yeah, I'm not perhaps classic defender, slight tackles and rough and ready, but yeah, obviously I've played international standard and certainly played centre back for a number of years now, and it's a position I feel I've learnt a lot in, and yeah, obviously I think that can develop even further at Seattle, and I want to improve in a lot of aspects of my game, and hopefully I can do that there as well. And certainly playing alongside the likes of Lou Barnes and Fletch, I think it's an opportunity to learn a lot and just develop on a number of aspects of my game, certainly the physical side, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
How much of a challenge is it going to be to try and almost have to break up that partnership of Lou Barnes and Kendall Fletcher, because you look at how dominant Seattle were, certainly during the regular season, a lot of that was... It was built on attacking play, but that back four and obviously Hope Solo as well. It's going to be a challenge to get in that side, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. And that's no secret. And I think it's a challenge that I wanted to accept, and it's something that I am aware of. I know that it's a unit and not just a back four and a goalkeeper. Certainly, the whole team has a very strong defensive structure and a certain way to play, and for last season especially it worked exceptionally well. And obviously traditionally with your defence you don't like to change it when things are going so well, but like I say, playing out there and playing with the pros, it's a chance for me to train every single day with these players, and again I want to show that I can train with them and play with them and also push them. I want to get game time and I want to play, and it's something that I hope I get the chance to do, and I certainly think I can do.
How important was the season that you had with Notts County Ladies? It was announced, I think, before Christmas that you were leaving the club. You had 1 year over here in England. How significant was that year in helping you to get to where you are now in the States?
Yeah, it was huge. I certainly had a good season, I felt, at Notts, and it was a step in my career where I was able to you know, change my lifestyle. I went from a very different life in Glasgow the years before and the years running up to it, and felt it was a good move for me. I think I learnt a lot, and yeah, under Rick obviously set up a good defensive unit there for us, and I think we showed that we had defensive qualities, and I felt I was a big part of that as well, and I felt I gained a lot of experience and different experience from what I'd had, like I say, previously from Glasgow and clubs in Scotland. So yeah, last year was a huge part of my career and a huge part of my development, and I feel like this is now the right decision, the right move for me and the next step.
Well, we've got some questions that will come up a little bit later in the interview, Rach, but just following on from my question there, Sylvain Jamet, who is a French follower of our show, he asked the question, did you choose to sign up only for one season in the FAWSL because you knew you'd go to the NWSL the following year? Was it always your intention only to spend a year in England?
No, I don't think I'd say that. I know that I certainly, when I made the decision to go to England, that my long-term plan was that at some point in my career I'd like to play abroad. And I think it's important when you make a decision to go from one sort of career change into the other, you could say that you have a long-term goal, and often long-term goals change along the way. And so, yeah, I wouldn't have said I wanted to just stay for 1 year in England. I think it was a case when I made my decision to sign in England, I chose to elect for a one-year deal because I wasn't sure what it would be like, for a lot of reasons. Like I say, it was a big lifestyle change, not necessarily a large geographical change, but or a culture change, but I felt it was something that, from a risk point of view, that 1 year was what I would do at the start of 2014. And obviously, you don't foresee the opportunities that can arise after a year. You don't know what's going to happen. So, yeah, it's one of these situations where after the year I felt it was the right time to move on.
How much did you enjoy your year with Notts? It wasn't an easy season, was it? Lots of injuries hit the squad before the season had even begun. You had to kind of dig deep, and actually it was probably the back four and Carly Telford who kind of gave the team the stepping stone that it needed, because you were very, very resolute at the back, and actually the season as a whole probably wasn't the worst in the end, and it could have been a lot worse, couldn't it, because of the number of players that you had out?
Yeah, it was difficult at times. I think a lot of people on the outside as well were quite critical and quite negative towards the team, but that was what it was. And like you say, I think we had a good defensive unit. Well, we had the best defensive unit in the league in terms of goals conceded, so yeah, that's credit to everyone that was involved in the club. It wasn't just the case of the back four and the goalkeeper. It was, like you say, everyone played their part, and it was a big part of our game and a big part of the way we played to ensure we didn't concede goals. And it was obviously, it looks favourable for me being a defender that we conceded the fewest.
And named the club's player of the year as well, so a nice accolade to leave on, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's always nice. I think, yeah, it's a nice personal award to get, but obviously it was important, or it is more important, that the team did well. And I think we probably didn't do as well as we wanted to at the start, but as you say, things change over the course of the season, and yeah, it was to reflect on the year as a whole, and I think there probably is, there's positives and negatives.
Well, during 2014, we've talked about the FAWSL. You had an interesting campaign with Scotland as well. Yeah. Missed out narrowly on reaching the World Cup in Canada this year. Tell me about that team, how disappointing it was to be knocked out by Holland in the playoffs, who we know eventually went on to beat Italy in the final and will be competing in Canada. How disappointing was it? Because I spoke to Kim Little last year and she felt, and I felt as well, that this was a great opportunity for Scotland. So I guess the question I'd have is, do you feel you fell a little bit short and didn't really do yourselves justice in those playoff legs?
Yeah, I think it was hugely disappointing and it's still a little bit bitter, I guess, and it's something that I was definitely personally really disappointed about, and more so not because we were knocked out, you know, by Holland. Obviously they're a good side and they were the favourites and whatever, but it was the manner, I think, in which we played in those two games that was extremely disappointing, because I don't think it showed in any way how well we can play, and when you don't give yourself the best chance to go through, it's always going to be difficult to go through, and especially playing a team like Holland. So yes, disappointing, and you can't really change these things, and obviously all we see now is the build up to the World Cup, so it's a constant reminder, but you have to learn from it. It's hard to know if you have learned from it until you go into the next campaign, really. It's easy to say you have, but we just have to focus now. I know that we've already had one training camp this year and trying to refresh things and make things different, and I'm trying to build again. And like I say, last year ended on a bit of sour taste. I think probably in the build up to the end of last year, we'd had a fairly good progression, and sometimes difficult to continue that. Sometimes you do go through little troughs, and perhaps it was just really bad timing that ours happened to come at the end of last year when we had important games. But the next thing is the European campaign, and we just have to hope that we can be ready for that.
And a Cyprus Cup before that in March as well. So plenty of opportunities to try and build on what was a good campaign up to those playoffs. I think people would agree. There's plenty of talent in that Scotland squad. And when players like yourself are going out to America and going abroad, there's no doubt opportunities there to develop and improve. Okay, as mentioned, had a few questions come in from people on Twitter. We use the hashtag AskCausey, so I've just clicked on it now, so I've got a few up in front of me. So you ready for this, Rach?
Yep.
First question came in from Neil Taylor, who said, being a defender with a considerable number of goals scored of your own, do you prefer stopping players' goals or scoring your own?
I suppose this is a bit of a cliched answer, but I think it always depends on the moment. You know, if you're 1-0 up and you stop a shot in the line, then that's obviously a bit of an exciting moment. Also, if it's 90th minute winner, then likewise. So, yeah, a bit of both. I'm going to say it depends on the moment.
Greedy, Rach. Greedy. That's my response to that one.
Yeah, I'm sticking with
that. Okay. So I had one come in from Paulina Lemus, who said, what are you most looking forward to with your US experience?
The coffee. Especially in Seattle.
Seriously?
No, I'll give a football answer. I think probably the pro environment. I think it's going to be something where, although, you know, the league in England is professional, and certainly I was professional, but I think in America, you know, training every single day with everyone in the team, and that's something I'm really looking forward to. I think it'll help me take my game to the next level. So, yeah, I'm going to say that the pro environment.
Okay. Well, I know coffee is a big thing in Seattle, so seeing as that was your first answer, I think you'll be fine while you're out there. Next one came in from Sandy, who said, welcome to the rain, Rachel. Is there any particular NWSL team or player that you're looking forward to playing against?
I think player-wise is tough. I think a lot of teams have, especially in the front line, a lot of teams have some really good attacking players. I've never played up against the likes of, I suppose, the biggest names are Alex Morgan and Abiram Beck. And then also, I think, from a team perspective, I know that Seattle and Portland have a rivalry, and I know it's a big rivalry. And so I'm looking forward to experiencing that, because I understand it's, you know, a great atmosphere to experience.
It is a great atmosphere. I went last year to Portland, Seattle in Portland, and credit to the Portland fans, they are loud. So that will certainly be an experience for you, no doubt whatsoever. Right, I like this one that's come in from Maddie. She said, if you are given the donkey shirt to wear, what is it most likely to be for?
It's definitely tripping over my own feet. I've got size UK 8.5 football boots, and numerous times last year I tripped over the hurdles doing fast feet, and that often resulted in the donkey shirt. So tripping over hurdles is probably what I'd get that for.
Good stuff. I look forward to that. I shall be seeking evidence of that when it happens, Rachel. Kirsten asked a similar question to one earlier about what you're going to enjoy about the NWSL. So thanks for your question, Kirsten. Ramel Diaz asked, how does the shorter NWSL campaign compare to longer seasons and multi-cup competitions in Europe? Now, I know it'll be a difficult one for you to answer based on the fact that you haven't played a game yet, but maybe compare the FAWSL, which is a summer league, much like the NWSL, to your time at Glasgow City, where you play through from September through to May.
I think first and foremost, you know, cup competitions are a thing that we have over here, and that's something that has quite a unique experience. It's something you get hyped up for. Obviously, in America, they don't have that, or they don't have it yet. But there's kind of not really a comparison for that. But I think in terms of league seasons, I think I've certainly felt this year that there is a long break at the end of the FAWSL, not as long as one I'm perhaps used to in Scotland, but. I think then when you compare that to America, there's opportunity for you to go and play elsewhere, and you make the window to go and extend your season if you want to, like many of the other players have managed to do, I think, that play there, certainly European ones. So, it's always difficult when you have long breaks in the season, but I think there's ways around that. So,
okay, great stuff. Fabs, who I know is a Notts County Ladies fan, asked the question, favourite moment of playing for Notts?
I think probably that was, I'm going to say when we beat Chelsea 1-0, and not just because it was Chelsea, but it was a big point in our season when a lot of people were talking about relegation, and I think it turned a lot of heads and showed what the team was capable of, and it was definitely a good feeling at the end of the game when we'd won, and arguably we maybe didn't deserve to win, but that's football, and like I say, it was important for the club at that point in time, and it was a good feeling.
Okay, final question, and it's an interesting one based on the fact that you came into the game a little bit later. We know that you're a qualified chartered accountant, for those that didn't know. Dave Graham asked the question, should girls stay in mixed teams as long as possible, or is a move to all girls beneficial earlier?
Well, from my personal experience, I played with boys up until I was, I think, 13. I think there is a benefit for playing with boys, but also I don't think it's a definite thing that should happen or a definite thing that shouldn't happen. I think it can be a negative thing. Obviously, boys develop stronger and faster, quicker, and when perhaps you're the elite in maybe your area for women's football, can be beneficial to just continue training with boys to keep progressing and keep up. But also I think now, in comparison to when I was younger, there's a lot more girls playing, and it's not as perhaps necessary. I don't know, it's a difficult one. There's a lot of arguments for and against it, I suppose. And like I say, you know, I actually have for the last couple of weeks been training with the boys team, and certainly extremely difficult, and it certainly pushes you, and it can be a good thing. So, yeah, I would say I'm for allowing mixed teams for longer, but I don't think it's something that's a necessity for girls to develop.
Okay, great stuff. Well, that wraps it up. So I will say thank you very much for joining me and joining the show for the very first time. And I wish you the very best in Seattle. And I'm sure that we will talk again while you are out in America.
Look it up. Sounds good.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So big thanks there to Rachel for her time. Wishing her all the best on her new adventure out in America in the NWSL. And if she is going to be getting that donkey t-shirt, we will certainly be hoping to hear as to why it was that she was handed it. Now, staying in America, I mentioned that we have JJ Duke from our friends at Our Game magazine. We are aware, of course, that the NWSL draft took place recently, and I wanted to get JJ back to speak about some of the highs and lows about that draft. So here he is talking to me about some of those moves that took place and who we should look out for in the 2015 NWSL season. So here he is. So I'm pleased to be joined once again by JJ Duke from one of our friends, Our Game magazine, who was present at the NWSL college draft last week. JJ, good to have you back. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, Kieran, I'm good. And yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. So you have agreed to come back to speak about the NWSL draft. You were present at the event. How was it?
A-plus in improvements on every standard from last year's draft. The atmosphere, phenomenal. Lots of people going to, and by the way, this was conflicting when United States, well, I should say now former United States men's national team player Landon Donovan was speaking at the NSCAA convention. So, hey, you know, the fact that the room was jam-packed from start to finish, great. The room was phenomenal. You know, it just felt like, you know, that buzz is there. And, I mean, we're talking in the late January right now, but you almost feel like the season's just about to get going. I'm pretty sure some of those players are ready to get the ball rolling.
Yeah, it's a nice little appetizer, isn't it, for the start of the season in the spring. Well, let's sort of go through, we're not going to go through player by player because that would be that would take us all week, or certainly it would take us a few shows. Looking at the first round, no surprises. We were all expecting Morgan Bryan to be picked first by the Houston Dash. That was true to form, and she will be playing in Houston next year. Gave a very nice video message at the event. Obviously, she's away with the US Women's National Team on camp in California at the moment, so she was unable to attend. Any surprises for you in that first round?
Well, I wouldn't say too much of a surprise. Of at least late, but Stephanie McCaffrey out of Boston College going a little higher than I would have expected at fifth overall. She was drafted by the Chicago Red Stars. Rory Dames, the head coach of the Red Stars, said afterwards that, you know, no matter where she was status-wise before being called in to the U.S. Women's National Team or not, they were probably going to go take her at fifth overall. And you know, there she was picked, and you know, but the move of the round was Boston Breakers trading their pick to get McCaffrey in exchange for the Red Stars to go back-to-back eighth and ninth. That, a little surprising, but then again, going by their track record, they like to pick the local products.
Is there any suggestion that the Red Stars may well have picked McCaffrey knowing that Boston were desperate to have her, and it gave them a bit of bargaining to, it gave them a bargaining tool to essentially say, look, you can have her, but we want your ninth and your 11th round picks?
I mean, I get, that's tough for me to put myself in the brain of the general managers and the coaches at the time. Maybe there might have been something in it, but again, when Rory James talked to the media afterwards, the head coach of Chicago, he said plain and simple that McCaffrey was going to be on their radar, and if she was available at fifth overall, so be it. Boston came up and said, look, we want her. And I guess that just happened to be that the move was not only the ninth pick, but the 11th pick was a little bit of a surprise to see. But then again, Boston still had a bunch of picks left over. So they knew what they were doing.
Now, when we did the preview of the draft in the last show, you picked out Danielle Colaprico as a player to look out for. Ended up going at number 9 in the first round to the Red Stars. So
yes,
you got that one right, mate.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, doing this for 3 years only gives me a little bit of leverage, not too much. But no, I mean, Colaprico is a phenomenal player. I think she's going to fit in right with Chicago well. They picked up Aaron Gilliland, a really do-it-all player from Kentucky the pick before that. So, I mean, you know, they have options now. And thinking with the Red Stars, Lori Kolupny back with the national team, so that opens up a potential spot for Colaprico to shine. You know, she's more of an outside midfielder, but I have seen her go through the middle at times. So you never know. I'll be curious to see what Rory Dooms does there, but hey, you know, they did very, Chicago did very well, that's for sure.
I asked you the question about the Western New York Flash potentially trading any of their first round picks, of which they had four. You said, I 100% guarantee they will not do that. You were correct, they did not do that. How do you think they fared?
Well, I put it down on the recap for the draft that, you know, you have the expectation for the Flash to do well in the draft, but then again, it all comes down to execution. Do you execute all your picks correctly to how you want? Obviously, in the later rounds, you know, they had a couple of picks, and I bet you they may have seen a couple of their players on the depth chart go by the wayside by other picks. But, you know, overall, I think Charlie Nemo coming on board with Aaron Lines, they did the job. Aaron said afterwards that this builds a good framework. He still has a lot of, well, not a lot, but a few more moves to make, potentially international. And he's noted to be pretty mum on that until he comes out with it. But usually they're solid picks to come. But, yeah, no, he built depth at all positions, got a couple of defenders, got a, you know, do-it-all midfielder, Sam Mewis. They got the front runner that they want, a product of Pally Blues, L.A. Blues, what have you, and Lynn Williams. You know, and then it just, it's going to be where do they go from there. But, again, it was a good start for them.
Let's move into the second round. We were chatting just before we came onto this recording about the time that was taken over the 13th pick. Now, the Houston Dash had that, but they traded that to the Portland Thorns in exchange for a player, and that player turned out to be Jessica McDonald. They also sent their 2016 second round pick to the Thorns as well. The Thorns then went and traded that number 13 pick to the Washington Spirit, and in return they were able to acquire England international Jody Taylor. So what did you make of that merry-go-round that occurred?
Well, I joked with Mark Parsons before and afterwards, and I said someone should have put a pedometer on you, because you covered every inch of that draft floor times three. The man was on a mission that day, and he said afterwards that, I'm pulling up what he did say, is like he couldn't believe it, that he got all the players that he wanted. Now remember, Washington came in with just one pick, and that was in the middle of the fourth round. But they traded not only for that pick, for the 13th, they also got one in the early second round, or excuse me, early third round as well. And they picked up three defenders, and two of those coming from UCLA, which are a year removed from winning national championship, and both of those players that they picked up, which were Megan Oyster and Caprice Didasco, both starters and relevant faces throughout that whole run for the Bruins. So, you know, was I a little surprised that Megan Oyster went first? Yes. More of the fact that I didn't really have her on my overall depth chart. I had a gut feeling she was going to be selected at some point. Maybe not at 13, but again, you know, Washington did very well to get those two UCLA players, and then a real, real gift of a pick at number 30. But we'll get to that in the fourth round, that's for sure.
Absolutely, and involved in all of that from a UK perspective, the interest for us is that Jody Taylor will be returning to the Pacific Northwest. She was a student at Oregon University, wasn't she? So a good pickup for Portland, especially, well, I was going to say, especially with players likely to be absent for the World Cup, but there's a very good chance that Jody will be as well. So it's going to be some competition there for those forward places in Portland, isn't there?
Yeah, and actually, I think you may have Jody Taylor off. She actually went to Oregon State University, different than University of Oregon. But right. Yeah, no, I mean, hey, it's a move. We'll see if it works out for Paul Riley. If Jody Taylor plays for England in the World Cup, then, you know, it's going to be just one of many that he'll miss. But if Jody agrees to come and doesn't make the roster, then that could be a move beneficial for the entire season.
You mentioned Cabrice Didasco going at the beginning of the third round. Were there any other players that leaped out at you when the round was complete?
Samantha Lofton by Boston Breakers. James Madison University is a school that's a little bit smaller, and I did not have her on my radar, but the general manager, Lee Billiard, you know, he really did his homework. And I think when I was last on to preview the draft, those later rounds really proved to be if you've done your work, then you're going to come and be successful. Now, Will, I don't know much about her game, but if she's able to have a good, you know, preseason, she'll either get one of those last spots, or with the World Cup, you know, she'll continue on probably with the reserve team, because they have a whole setup over there. Boston Breakers do. They have a reserve team, a college academy team, then the whole youth system. Now, granted, a little bit different from overseas. That doesn't really mean a whole lot with the youth teams, but definitely with the reserve team, that's for sure. Those are players that have a good chance at becoming call-ups for later on in the season.
You had striker Kiyomo Ubagagu, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, of Stanford, high up your draft list for the forward. She was picked by Sky Blue FC at number 28. Were there any others in round four that leaped out at you and you think might have an impact for their respective side?
Well, again, going back to the Spirit, they picked up Whitney Church out of Penn State, 30th overall. Now, Whitney Church was a first-team All-American out of Penn State, and she was one of the players that did attend the draft. And for, you know, I was thinking, if anything, she was going to be a second round, maybe early third round at most. How she dropped to 30th, I don't know, but the Spirit got a massive gift by getting Whitney Church, because she's going to be one of those players that Mark Parsons is going to call on when you have the likes of Allie Krieger and, you know, the many, or Crystal Dunn, among others, that are going to be missing time for the Women's World Cup, and she's going to be playing some valuable minutes out of defense. So that was a big pickup right there.
Okay. UCLA grabbed the bragging rights. I think six players from that side were drafted. Stanford had a few. University of Virginia. Which team, and I'm talking about the teams in the league now, which team do you think had the best draft looking at the picks that they got?
Well, you know, I'm going to give a three-way tie here. Western New York Flash, because they did the job. They got exactly everything that they wanted. They picked up a goalkeeper, a very solid goalkeeper in Sabrina D'Angelo, late on in the draft with their last pick, who can give competition to Chantel Jones for the number one job. Then you look at Chicago Red Stars. They picked up a lot of good players that can do a lot of different things. Lots of speed. Got some goal scoring in there with Sofia Huerta and also Rachel Tejada out of Illinois State, which is another one of those small schools here. Division I school, and she holds, I think, the scoring records for not only her school for a single season and career, but also the conference she plays in. So very quality goal scorer. And also FC Kansas City, kind of quiet in their day, but they end up picking up a few local products, especially Shea Groom. That was Vlatko Ananovsky's number one radar pick. They're going to do anything to get her. She's a very talented midfielder, attacking midfielder. She could play up front if need be. And also got Caitlin Rowland out of UCLA, United States U-20 International. Can compete for minutes, and now with Nicole Barnhart, you know, back in the picture with the U.S. national team, she's going to be potentially thrown in for a good 6-7 games as the starter. And anytime you get a former youth international as your potentially number one or number two selection, you have to be pretty happy about yourself. And I think the Blues did another quality job.
And if you look at any of the teams, and I wouldn't say would you be critical of any teams and the approach that they had, but do you think there are any teams from the day that maybe are left a little bit short going into the new season?
No, I mean, you have it right on the head. You know, with the depth in this draft, you really can't have a loser on the day. But Sky Blue FC's probably, you know, I can't say they're kicking themselves a little bit, because they wanted and they were hoping to have Cole Parrico drop down to 10. She played, you know, in under, I think, the assistant coach for Sky Blue at the club level for a couple of years. She's a local product. You know, they got Kristen Grubka instead at the 10th pick after Cole Parrico was selected by Chicago. So a very solid defender right there. But then you have a couple of those players, Daphne Carboz, Chioma Ubagagu, who may be looking overseas potentially to play. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I was really hoping to see Sky Blue kind of put to bed their subpar draft from last season. In terms, they got quality players, but it didn't really produce on the field. So, hey, you know, maybe it turns out right for them that they get one of those two players I mentioned to stay in New Jersey this season, and they might get some decent production. But, you know, I was hoping a little bit more out of Sky Blue.
And, of course, they'll be missing Sophie Schmidt after it was announced recently that she has not been allocated by the Canadian Federation. So that's going to be a big blow for Sky Blue. So some rebuilding to do for them. A question that I probably ask on behalf of actually myself and those that aren't as familiar with the college system.
Okay.
There's clearly a number of players that will try and be drafted and will make themselves available for draft. For those that don't get picked, what future do they have? Where do they go? What do they do?
Okay, so the next kind of process is all the teams still hold open tryouts. So that is anybody that wants to register themselves, you know, pay the, I think, you know, ranging on the teams, you know, $50 or whatnot for a couple sessions, get themselves looked at by the coaches, and potentially get invited to preseason as, you know, what we call a non-roster invitee. Now, there are some players that didn't get drafted, especially Paul Riley of Portland made it clear that, you know, despite the fact that he had no draft picks, he was hoping that there were going to be some picks that would, or players that put themselves in for the draft but didn't get drafted, that he would invite straight away. One of those actually being Laia Labonta from Stanford, a good quality midfielder right there that has, you know, West Coast ties. But there are players that didn't get drafted that aren't going to see their future in potentially professional soccer end quite yet. Now, there are going to be some of those that, you know, just decide that they threw their hat in just for let's see what happens, might play in the semi-pro leagues around here while, you know, looking for opportunities outside of soccer, or they might try their luck overseas. There's plenty of American players and also players that played in the collegiate system here in the United States that are, you know, sprinkled all across Europe and, you know, other places as well. So, you know, it's not over, that's for sure. You're definitely going to be seeing some names of players that didn't get drafted that will still pop up on preseason rosters here, but it's a long process, and there are players that make it through open tryouts and make it through the preseason, so it's not unlikely. That's kind of where it goes.
Great stuff, JJ. As always, a pleasure. Thank you very much for the preview and the review, and we will speak to you again very soon.
For sure. Have a good one.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So big thanks there to JJ, plenty of players to look out for and no doubt some talented individuals who will be lighting up the NWSL this year, especially with a number of internationals who are likely to be away during the Women's World Cup in Canada. Now, speaking of the draft, I wanted to try and get hold of an individual who is likely to make a big impact in the league, and who better than to speak to the overall number one pick, Morgan Bryan. So I spoke to her during her time away with the US Women's National Team during a camp in California, and she spoke to me about joining the Houston Dash and looking ahead to her year in 2015. So here she is. So I'm delighted to be joined by Morgan Bryan for the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. Morgan, thank you for joining me. Now, I want to start off to talk about recent events. The NWSL draft took place recently, and although there was no surprise that you were picked as the overall number one player, how did it feel knowing when you found out that you were going to be going to the Houston Dash as the number one player? How did it feel knowing how much work has gone into this over the course of your career?
Yeah, it was obviously a really humbling and honoring experience. I think that I wish I could have been at the draft, and I heard a lot of my friends were there, and it was an awesome experience. And I was really excited to go to the Houston Dash. It's a great organization, and I've worked with Randy Waldron before, and so I'm excited to start my professional career in Houston.
You obviously work towards that moment, not necessarily to be picked number one overall, but to enter the professional game. Does there feel like a weight lifted off your shoulders when that your name is read out, or when you find out that you're going to be picked and you're going to be playing in the NWSL in 2015?
Yeah, I think so. I think as a soccer player that plays at a high level for a very long time, and like you said, you do so much to prepare for these moments, and I think that it's something that any soccer player in college would dream about, is playing in the NWSL and starting a professional career. So I'm really excited, and I am super happy to be, you know, in the draft and being able to play in a league that's in the United States. And that's something that we've been working really hard. You know, I think the U.S. soccer has worked really hard to make this league an option for players that are coming out of college. So I'm very fortunate to be playing in the United States.
I think it would be fair to say that of the players picked, there's probably only a handful that those outside of America would recognize: yourself, Sarah Killian, Sam Mewis, a handful of others. You've been in the U.S. women's national team set up for the last couple of years now. So the spotlight's probably been on you a little bit more. Do you feel a bit more pressure going into the league because of that? Or do you just sort of think that you do, I don't have any control over it, I just go in and play my own game?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter, what you said. I don't really feel much pressure. I play soccer for fun, and I think that's what, you know, gets players like people like Sam and Sarah so far, is you go on the field and you play for fun and you don't think about everything off of it and the pressure that comes with it. But it's not really pressure, I think, for any of us, and I think we're just excited to start playing professionally, and it's something that we haven't done yet, so it's cool to be able to just focus 100% on your professional career.
It's a unique setup in the United States. I've spoken to a few players about it. I spoke to Jill Ellis about it before Christmas. Doesn't exist in other parts of the world. Obviously in England we don't have the college system. Players could be entering a team at 16, 17 years old, as has been the case. How beneficial do you think it is to have gone through the college system before you enter the professional game? Or do you think there are advantages of perhaps entering the professional game a little bit younger, so that you're a little bit more prepared when you get to the age of 22, 23?
I think there's advantages of both. Like you said, when you enter a professional environment at the age of 16, you probably aren't quite ready for it yet, but you adjust to it pretty quickly and you adapt, and people learn the speed of play quicker, and maybe that helps them longer in the long run with their development. And I think that playing in college also for in the United States is something that people love to do, and I loved my experience in college, and I wouldn't trade it for, you know, anything. So I think that either way there's advantages of it, and you get an education along with it when you play in college, and there's some really good teams in college and a lot of good players. And I think sometimes people in college use those 4 years to develop some skills, and then they enter professionally. So I think there's positives to both, and both of them have worked pretty well.
We'll talk about Houston shortly, but before we do that, before the draft took place, you were named the Mac Herman Trophy winner for the second year running. Dagny Brynjell's daughter and Sam Mewis were the two runners-up. How much of an honour was it to receive it, not once, but twice, and only the fifth player to do that, and only the fourth player to win it back-to-back?
It was a huge honor. I think that the night that they host at the Mac Herman Club is such an unforgettable experience. And some of the players that have been up for the award last year and this year are awesome players, and they deserve a lot of credit for their seasons and how far their team's gotten. I think that just being with them and named amongst them is an honor, and they, like I said, going to go on to do some great things in their respective countries. And I was really honored to have that award. And I think that it shows a lot about my teammates and the coaching staff that I have at the University of Virginia. And they, you know, helped me a lot. And I missed half the season this year. And I think that they did an extremely good job when I was gone, and did really well. So I think for them, it was more of a team award rather than an individual award.
Okay, cool. Well, we mentioned that you, of course, been drafted by the Houston Dash, the newest organization in the NWSL. They'll be going into their second season, probably a little bit more spotlight on them this year. I think it would be fair to say that because they were a year behind everyone else last year, they'll remain a year behind, but they've got that first year under their belt. A little bit more spotlight on them. How much of an opportunity is this for you to really make an impression and also to try and propel that Houston Dash side up the league a little bit more than they were last year?
Yeah, it's a new organization, but I think that they have all the pieces to succeed, and especially with the changes they've made in the past couple of months with the players they've brought in and everything like that. So I watched them play last year, and I think that they got a little bit unlucky in some of the results, and they were playing really good soccer at times. So just coming into that program and organization, I'm really hoping that, you know, we continue to play good soccer and it gets results and attracts a lot of fans.
Well, I know you're going to be playing with some very talented individuals, but obviously the news came out just before Christmas that Carly Lloyd had been traded to the Houston Dash. You all know her very well from your time in the US Women's National Team setup. How much of a benefit is it going to be for you playing alongside what is essentially a bit of a legend in US soccer?
Yeah, I'm really excited to play with Carly, and I think I've told a lot of people that, you know, she's a great player, and she's helped me off the field and on the field and make myself a better player, and I'm really excited to play alongside of her in the midfield, and she's such an awesome player, and she has helped my game grow, and so I can't wait to just play with her every single day and play in games alongside of her.
Well, obviously this season will be slightly disrupted by a rather small tournament taking place in Canada in June and July. Lots of competition in midfield, and I'm sure that you will be up there competing with other players for that World Cup squad. As a young player and one of the younger members of the squad, how exciting is it to potentially go into a World Cup in your first year as a professional soccer player?
It's a really exciting thought, but like you said, there's so much competition here that, and being a young player, that you have to, I have to take every single day, one by one, and you know, hopefully I do. I'm fortunate enough to make the roster to go to the World Cup, because I think that's an experience that, you know, people really cherish, and it would be an amazing experience for me as a young player, and I would be very fortunate to make the roster, and I hope that does happen, and we'll just have to see in the next couple of months and see what happens.
I asked Jill Ellis before Christmas about how she goes about integrating young players that aren't in the professional game. And I specifically use you as an example because you're surrounded by players that you've probably looked up to growing up and have tried to emulate when you were a child. How have you felt embedding yourself into that US Women's National Team squad, surrounded by such high-profile names, some of the biggest names? How did you embed yourself, and how did the players make you feel welcome in terms of trying to make it easy for you?
Yeah, that was probably one of the hardest parts about coming into camp for the first time, and because once you do get here, I think the first couple of days you're a little more starstruck than anything else, and especially when you see someone like Abby Wambach, who you've watched play for a really long time now since you were younger, and your dream has been to play on that team, and it was more of a dream than and it became reality, you know. So when you first get here, you keep pinching yourself a little bit. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, Abby was the first one to come up and introduce herself to me, so they've been great off the field and integrating us younger players. And I think for us, we have to just realize that you have to compete, and if you want to be here at the end of the day, you got to play well and compete and keep doing what you can on the field to make yourself stay here.
So I guess my final question, we're in January at the moment. If I were to ask you, what are Morgan Bryan's main ambitions and objectives for 2015, what would your response be?
I would probably say to make the World Cup roster.
Okay, excellent. Well, I won't take up any more of your time, but thank you very much, Morgan. Maybe we'll do a more in-depth interview later on in the year, and we can catch up with you when you've played a few games for the Dash as well.
Okay, thank you for having me. Sounds good.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players. Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audioboom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
So big thanks there to Morgan, someone who I have absolutely no doubt will be lighting up the NWSL, the US Women's National Team, and I am willing to put my neck on the line and say I think she will be a future Ballon d'Or contender in the years to come. And that nicely brings us to the end of the show. I would like to thank Rachel Causey, JJ Duke and Morgan Bryan for appearing on this episode, and of course to you, the listener, for downloading this episode. If you wish to get in contact with us, you can do. We are on Twitter on @WosoZone. You can contact us via email on wosozone@gmail.com. There's a number of ways to listen to the show. You can, of course, log on to audioboom.com/WosoZone, or you can, of course, as always, download us on iTunes if that is your preference. Thank you once again for tuning in. Apologies again for the slight delay in getting this episode to you. Already got a couple of players lined up for the next episode, so hopefully you'll tune in for that. So until then, I wish you well and goodbye.